I mean, can you imagine W.C. Fields drinking Diet Yoo-Hoo? I mean, or eating granola?
That's granola.
My favorite image, though, would be W.C. Fields sitting down to a good breakfast of Fruit Loops. Would you please, Sam, if you will? I mean, can you imagine drinking a drink that by itself is a diet drink, and now they've come out with a no-cal diet drink? In other words, a diet drink that is a double diet drink? All right, bring it up, please, Sam. We don't want to inflict this terrible stuff on people. By the way, many elements of tonight's show will have certain aspects of totally bad taste, which, of course, reflects only real life as we know it in our time. It does not necessarily represent the views of the management, which is always in exquisitely good taste and always recommends good taste. And nor does it recommend, nor does it represent the attitudes of the speaker, who is always in favor of good taste, in spite of the fact that most of the life that we live is in bad taste. So you'll just have to take your choice. Down the dial, they're playing Barbara Streisand. That's good taste for you. You know, I've always felt that a really good working comic needs a foil. After all, Jerry Lewis did lose something when Dean Martin went on, to become Dean Martin. He really did. He needs a foil. I mean, where would, for example, even Charlie Chaplin, where would Charlie Chaplin have been if it wasn't for that great big heavyset guy that wore that funny hat and had the black eyebrows who played the cop all the time? Nowhere. I mean, he'd come out there, he'd do his little thing, you wouldn't laugh. It wasn't until the cop came out and decided to lay the arm on him that you laughed. Right. So every good comic needs a foil. Now, in my case, my foil has always been the listener. Yeah, that's right. You're playing the dumb cop that keeps coming in and saying, "What are you talking about, huh?" Well, if the shoe fits, buddy, put it on. But that is if you can tie the laces. But the facts of the matter... you have to learn how to do that, too. Can't you remember when you were a kid and you actually learned how to tie your shoes? That's right. I mean, that's one of life's little mileposts that you passed. Now, not everybody passed it. I don't know what you're laughing about. Listen, I know some guys who never really learn how to tell time. They keep looking up at the clock, and you can see their lips moving. The big hand is like... I mean, don't be so funny. I hear you're laughing. But some of the most basic tools that we use in our life, a lot of people never quite mastered them. I mean, have you noticed a lot of guys' ties keep slipping down? They never learn how to tie a tie. Now, learning how to tie a tie, I remember as a kid, I can recall the fantastic sense of total achievement I had. You remember, right? I tied my tie, and it was actually tied. It really looked like a tie. Instead of, like a chunk of cloth with a knot in it. And that's a tremendous moment. And then, I mean, what really bugged me was no sooner had I learned how to tie a tie, wearing ties went out of style. I mean, don't laugh. It's a problem now today. As a matter of fact, very few guys wear ties much. You know, when you have to wear a tie, when you've got going someplace, they say they specify a tie. Well, I've actually found myself saying, "Now, wait a minute. Now, let's see." Right? Well, let's see. You think you were... See how shaky your knowledge is, buddy? I mean, you think you could tie a tie in the dark? Well, you'd be surprised. You'd forget how to do it. Well, I'll tell you another great little moment of total victory. I mean, learning how to tie a tie is one thing, but you're listening to a guy who really has a basic skill that sets me apart from the run of the hoi polloi lemming mankind. And I'm very proud of it. What would you think that would be? I mean, I'm serious, secretly very proud of it. And I'll tell you, there isn't one man in ten that can do it. I'm talking about grown-up men. Nope. And I'll tell you how I learned it. I mean, I learned it one hellish weekend. But nevertheless, what I'd like to say is, from the standpoint of reality, that I must say, though, that real life bears little relationship to anything in showbiz. Nothing. There is nothing in showbiz that's like real life. And the more television tries to get serious, the more it goes away from it. I don't know whether you saw this great 3-hour thing on violence, the TV. Everybody's looking very serious. But the funny part of it was, as Edwin Newman says, and America is a violent country, and he's going on talking about all this bad stuff, and they were interrupting it, where I saw it, you know, when they do a station break, with promos for Kojak. And each one, it shows Kojak saying something like, and I'll thrill you in the head! Boom, boom, boom! And you saw a car going down over the cliff, blowing up, and then they would say, next week on NBC, and then they'd... So, you see, unconscious humor can be found everywhere, and it's found in the most pompous moments. Like the other night, I heard this commentator come on scene, and, you know, the very serious type, when the newsman says, and now, here is Eric C. Bugleblast, and tonight's commentary on the news. And they switch to another place, you know, and he's got this red curtain behind him, and looks very serious. And he says things like, well, tonight, it marks the 225th anniversary of the birth of the motor car. So they always talk slow, these guys. The birth of the motor car. We in this corner say that the Americans' love affair with the motor car, which is evil and smelly and kills 27 million people a year and is very, very expensive, is totally beyond me and totally beyond a thinking person. And yet this is what our society is doing. And that is tonight's commentary on the news. Back to Walter. Well, I thought... I mean, I almost fell over. I can imagine this guy, because I know the guy. He goes to work every night in the longest, blackest Cadillac limousine you ever saw in your life. That baby gets maybe 3-4 miles to the gallon downhill with the key off. The next night suggested that all take mass transit. Can you conceivably see Walter Cronkite coming to work on the subway? I just thought I'd throw that out there, gang. Or John Chancellor, or Barbara Walters, or any of them for that matter. And yet they're always talking about the trouble with this country is that they don't want mass transit. And we should have mass transit. And I can't imagine the professor, the head of the sociology department, coming to work on it. So unless it's Mercedes 220 transmission or something, you know. but so this is all the kind of stuff, you know, that you keep seeing when you watch television. Now, in the name of reality, I mean, to bring reality right down into
where it lives.
I'm not a reality, one way or the other. But I'm fascinated with the difference between life and fantasy. That's what's fascinating. Can you imagine what would happen? By the way, speaking of fantasy, the worst picture I've seen this year, I have to give my award, the worst picture. What's the worst picture you've seen this year, Sam? And the year is young. Already, they've laid a bomb on me. Oh, absolutely. Right on the button, King Kong is the worst picture. In fact, I found... that I kept forgetting what picture I'm seeing while they were playing the titles. What a bomb! What a bomberooning! You know, there's an old slogan in art. You know what the slogan is? If you can't paint, do it big. In other words, generally speaking, the bigger the picture, the worse the producer, director, the actor, the writer, the script writer, et cetera, down the line. In other words, the bigger the picture in almost every case, the bigger the bomb. It takes real talent to make a very small picture out of a low budget. That takes talent.
I'll tell you.
Oh, incidentally, we've got to say this before we go any further. You know, the 1977 is just a brand new year. I mean, it's just starting out. And already starting out with great promise to be the nuttiest year ever. We're starting our third century? Yeah, we're starting it with it. I mean, this is the year that is going to see Evel Knievel leap over a tank of sharks. How's that for intellectual? I mean, this is the kind of stuff, I don't even think Caligula in ancient Rome would have thought much about that. The next thing it has to, did you know that there's a guy that is now going to fight a white shark, you know, the great killer shark, with karate? And another guy is going to fight a tiger with karate.
And so
the world moves on as man becomes more civilized. But we just got to bring these, bring them out into the open. But, you know, speaking of reality, for example, I saw one night on the Waltons, they had this birthday party. Did you see that episode? Had this birthday party. Of course, everybody is so involved in birthdays. So this kid's going to have his birthday. So they make a whole big thing with the cake and everything. And they sing the happy birthday song. And they go through this whole thing. And they give him his gift. And what do you think his gift is? It is the gift of love. Now, every kid would love to have that laid on him, wouldn't he? That's a writer's idea. No, a gift of love. And what they did was give him, yeah, they gave him this cake, and they explained to him that it was a depression and nobody was working, and what they're all going to give John, or whatever his name is, John Boy, or little Cletus, or whatever the kid's name was, they were going to give him the gift of love, and they all got up and gave him a kiss. And you know what he said at the end of that? Mom, Mom, it's the best birthday that a kid ever had. Bum, ba-dum, bum. TV strikes again. Well, if you're going to try that on your kid, give him a gift of love for his birthday, you better be prepared to have a fight on your hands. I mean, but nevertheless, this is the kind of stuff, see. And when I saw that TV episode, I thought to myself, oh, God. Oh, wow. And so tonight, I've decided to do a salute to that little unrecognized American, and it's very American, that little unrecognized American yearly ritual that we all have. Would you please?
Happy birthday to you.
Yes, happy birthday.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Dear fellow Victor, happy birthday to you. As you struggle your way through life, as the unkind winds buffet you from one table to the next, as you struggle through the alimony payments, happy birthday to you. As the cold sores come to... All right, we're going to have a party. All right. Happy birthday. Now, I'm not a curmudgeon. I'm really not, you know. No, I'm not. No. I dig birthday parties. Oh, no. The one thing about me, I am not a curmudgeon. And you know what a curmudgeon is. That's a 19th century word meaning sorehead. I mean, well, Scrooge was a curmudgeon. I mean, a curmudgeon is always saying, "Bah, humbug." Well, I don't say that. I dig birthdays. It's just that they can be very painful. I mean, and embarrassing. Not because you're another year older, but because you don't quite know what to do on a birthday. And at one of the most embarrassing things I ever had in my life, one time, Do you know that I did a happy birthday program on television? Yeah. Yeah, what we had was a five-minute TV show, and the program director, this was out in the Midwest, the program director, I had this comedy show.
Number nine,
you know? Program director came to me and he says, listen, he said, will you do me a favor? I said, what is the favor that you want? I mean, I'm always suspected, really deeply suspicious of favors the program directors ask you. And he says, well, I'll tell you what the story is. You know that gift shop down in the corner of 4th and Walnut? La Petite Gifty Shoppy. I says, yeah, I know the La Petite Gifty Shoppy. They got those little cute rabbits in the window all the time. They're playing violins. And the little bears that are sitting down there drinking beer and stuff like that. He says, yeah, that's the place. Kitchell place. I says, what's the favor? He says, well, the guy that owns that absolutely loves you. And what he wants to do is on a birthday television show where every day we salute a kid who's having a birthday in the audience. I said, what? He says, yeah. They want to salute a kid that's having a birthday. I said, well, how do I do that? He said, well, you have this theme. Do you want to hear it? Play it again. That was the theme. The theme came on like this, and they're looking dumb.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday.
I said, hello, gang. Oh, birthday people everywhere. Hello, birthday fans everywhere. Today we have a real special birthday to celebrate.
Happy birthday.
It's the birthday of little Marsha Bugleblast, who is 8 years old today. Happy birthday, Marsha. Now let's all sing to Marsha. Let's sing it all up.
We're gonna have a party.
Oh, wow. I'll tell you, when I get up before the bar of justice and St. Peter looks down, he is going to ask me about that show. It's been entered in the big book. On the red ink side. Well, I'll tell you though. I do have one thing I must say. When I saw that kid getting the gift of love. Do you know what a real gift of love is? When somebody sits down and he's going to give a present to somebody else, and he really thinks about it. Now that's not the same as running around a lot. Going to a lot of stores. He really thinks about it. He says, if I was Sam, what would I like to get? And you know what that takes? You have to erase yourself. And you have to think through that other person's head. Now, a lot of people are too self-involved to do that. It's not easy. Well, I will never forget. In fact, out of all the gifts that I remember getting, now all of you have gotten gifts all of your life. I mean, from the time you were a little kid, you've gotten gifts, Christmas gifts, birthdays, and so on. I expect that if you're 30 years old, let's just take that age, 30, you've probably gotten a couple of gifts in your time. How many of them actually, without sitting there and really deliberately thinking, really racking your head, how many of them can you actually remember? Maybe three or four at the most. And those were gifts that somebody really thought about. They really laid one right down the middle of the alley. Pow. Well, I remember a gift I got that absolutely, I'll tell you, it blew my beezer. Now, the hardest thing to give is a gift to a kid. Why? Because, for one thing, kids are more open. That doesn't mean they're more honest than people, because kids are people. Kids are more... I'm more open. In other words, he hasn't learned yet to control the look of disappointment. I mean, we all have learned that I mean, that's the thing you learn pretty early in life. And so by the time you're, say, 17 or 18, you've already got that under control. But when you give a kid of 8 or 9 a gift, I mean, the look of disappointment, like, uh-huh. Like, yeah, I really like them bunny slippers. Yeah, yeah, they're really cute. Ooh. You know, the kid is not, it's not so much that he's honest. He's very open. He's everything there is there. Well, I remember what birthday it was. I was 9. Now, what would a boy of nine. Now, the most obvious things, get him a bike, right? Well, a boy of 9, at that point, has usually had a lot of bikes. You have a tricycle, you get a bike, you know. It would be great to get a nice new bike. Okay, fine. But that doesn't show any ingenuity. It does not fill a secret gap. That's the trick of a gift. A secret gap. A gap that often the kid himself didn't know he had. Now, that's sneaky. And I was 9, okay? How I remember I was 9 is because of what the gift was. Now, my mother, you know, and my kid brother, we had this... I was 9, okay? My kid brother, he was about 7, see? So, we're going to have this birthday. and a couple of kids came over, you know, they had the birthday thing in the afternoon and all that stuff. And I, you know, the usual thing, and the card came and little things with bunnies on it and all that stuff. And I would not have remembered my 9th birthday because most people can't remember. Can you remember specific birthdays? Can you remember your 8th birthday or your 7th or your 12th even? Or no, that's right. You can't even hardly remember your last birthday. But there's just a generic thing that you have in your head, just the universal birthday. You know, you don't think in terms of remembering one specific. I remember my 9th, and I'll tell you why I remember my 9th. The night of my birthday. Now, I had whatever gifts I got, and I don't even remember any of the other gifts. None of them. As far as I was concerned, my birthday is already over now. See, it's after supper. I have my gifts and everything else, and it's kind of cooling off, and I'm no longer the birthday boy, you know. We had the birthday cake and all that stuff. And now it's in the evening when the phone rang. See, my mother goes in the front, she answers, and she picks up the phone, and she's talking to my Aunt Glenn. Well, my Aunt Glenn, who was an aunt that hardly ever came over. You know, she's just one of those distant aunts that you once in a while run into. See, my mother says, well, you know, it's little Jeannie's birthday, and we're staying home tonight. Well, no, you can come home. No, we've had the party. No, it's okay. Oh, yeah. And in other words, my Aunt Glenn didn't even know it was my birthday. See, they didn't know it. So, anyway, they're coming over. So, I didn't think anything about it, so I go down to the basement. I'm fooling around. I come back up, and about an hour later, the doorbell rings, and in comes my Aunt Glenn and my Uncle Tom. Well, they come in, and my Aunt Glenn had this gift, right? And a typical aunt gift, which I immediately forgot. I don't remember the gift at all. It was just my Aunt Glenn had a gift. Well, we're sitting around, and I'm talking to my aunt, telling her about all the gifts I got for my birthday. You know, aunts always say, what did you get for your birthday? And you take this stuff out and you show them. And I go in the kitchen, and I'm fooling around. I come back out, and all of a sudden, my Uncle Tom my Uncle Tom, I can't even remember much about him. He was just one of those uncles that disappear out of your life early. But I'll always remember this. Uncle Tom, I come back into the living room, and he said, come over here. He said, it's your birthday. And I said, yeah. He says, well, got your gift. I says, yeah. And he reaches into his pocket. Now, the most cop-out gift of all is to give a kid money. I mean, it's great to get it, but you don't remember it. It's just money. I figured, you know, he's going to give me $1 or something. No. Uncle Tom reaches in his pocket, and he takes out of his back pocket, the greatest gift that I ever got in a whole string of birthday gifts. And he says, this is for you. This is for you. And he laid it on me.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Yes.
Happy birthday.
Fantastic.
Happy birthday.
Good
happy
Lord.
Birthday to you.
There I had in my hand something that a 9-year-old boy goes bananas over. Only I never thought of it. I never thought of asking for this as a gift. It was my first wallet. Now, if you're so old that you don't see how exciting it is for a 9-year-old boy to get a wallet, you are really getting old. You're getting old where it counts in your head. Because if there's anything that sets men apart from boys when you're a little kid, is men carry wallets. My dad was always taking this wallet out and looking through it. He had all these papers, and he had all these little glass envelopes that had stuff like licenses in it. I mean, that is a symbol. And even today, most men, I'm serious, most men, the unconscious thing that's always in their mind is checking their wallet. The great guys often will walk out of a shower without any pants on. But that wallet, you check the wallet. Because the wallet contains your life. And if you don't have a wallet, somehow you're really naked. You really are naked. As a matter of fact, you know, this is part of police psychology. One of the ways they really get a guy so that he's ready almost to confess is to take away his wallet. I mean, it's like they simply said, look, we're taking all of it away. We're taking not the money. The money's nothing. It's all the rest. It's the wallet. And it was a leather wallet. And Uncle Tom said, here, let me show you how it works. He says, now see, look. He says, now here's where you put your important papers. And it had one of these slide things, you know, with all the glassine envelopes. He says, you can put all your papers in there. He said, now here, over here on the other side, it's got this little thing with a clip on it, this little snap. It's got this little, you can put your change in it. And here's for your big bills. Big bills. And he opened it up, and inside of it was 9 $1 bills. Nine. I'll tell you, that night I was out of my skull. And I went into my room and I put my important papers in my wallet. Like, for example, all right, you want to know what they were, all right? All right. We had a bus pass for school. You know, the pass, the bus that you have to have. I had combination lock, which had a combination. So it had a little card. It says the comp. I put that in the back and a secret. So if anybody, you know, stole my wallet, they would never know how to open my combination lock. And I put all this great stuff, you know, it was bulgy. See, and I stuck them. Oh, wait, I haven't told you the best part of it. The front of it had a picture on it, burnt in the leather, of Roy Acuff. Now, that's a wallet. I mean, it was big leather, fat one. It wasn't a plastic. It was a man's wallet. Now, remember, it was a real wallet. My kid brother went out of it. He was so bummed that my kid brother threw a tantrum that lasted for 8-9 months just because I had this wallet. And I'll never forget the first afternoon taking it out casually, you know. I had a calendar in it. You know, one of these things you get free from the bank. I took it out, and I says, Schwartz, I'll look and see what next Wednesday, what? That's the 12th. Schwartz turned blue.